Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Kirk.
And I'm Lemmy.
And this is Who is Watching the Watchers, a What If podcast. Our plan is to cover 2 episodes per cast and try to follow the daily release of episodes pretty close, hopefully covering everything by January 1st.
And this episode, we're covering the first 2 episodes of the new season. What if Nebula joined the Nova Corps? And what if Peter Quill attacked Earth's mightiest heroes?
Psych. All right, just before we get started, I wanted to mention, because Lenny had asked me, and I've forgotten to mention it on air with you guys, with our listeners, but we roll as a hard R in terms of rating. we don't filter. So if F-bombs are not your thing, then we apologize, but there will be a few here and there, and just wanted to let people know. Secondly, I'm fighting my first cold in 4 years. So I'm not feeling all that great, but I'm drinking a lot and eating cough drops to help keep me from coughing and hacking and sounding horrible. So my apologies if this doesn't sound great. Okay, so in general, Lenny, what's your overall kind of take before we get into the specifics of each episode? Why don't we discuss a little bit how we feel about the first 2 episodes of the season?
Well, I think that we're off to an excellent start. I thought both of the episodes were strong. I liked the first one, and I liked the second one even more.
Yeah, I would concur. I would agree. We'll get into the specifics, but there was a lot of reasons I really loved the first episode, and I loved that they started with it. I think the animation in both episodes is on par, if not, I think in that first episode, even superior to what we were seeing last season. So that's nice to see. I felt like, at least story-wise, I agree. I think they're both strong stories. I like the first one a little bit more than the second one, but I enjoyed both a lot. And so I'm really pleasantly, not surprised, but pleasantly pleased.
You're pleased.
Yeah, I'm pleased with how it's starting. So let's go through a brief recap. What if Nebula joined the Nova Corps? Why did I pronounce the S? Nova Corps. Nova Prime recruits Nebula to join the Nova Corps following Ronan the Accuser's successful coup against Thanos. 5 years later, after Xandar has sealed off from the universe to protect itself from Ronan's forces, Nebula discovers the body of Yondu and receives orders from Nova Prime to investigate. So that's kind of the general setup for how this episode begins to unfold. We'd like to also call out each with every episode the returning actors or actresses. So we got Karen Gillan back as Nebula. Surprisingly, Jude Law as Yon Rogg. Did that surprise you, or did you already know about that?
I didn't, and I was. It's great that they got him.
Yeah, I agree, and I think what's really good about that is that the animation of a character like him doesn't, you know, define the character very well. You know what I mean? I mean, with a lot of these people, these characters, you know, they have cool costumes or they have cool features. You know, Yondu's blue and everything else. But if you're just an average looking person, the animation's not really. The likenesses aren't great. You know what I mean? But having that voice, immediately he was in character for me. So Michael Rooker back as Yondu, although I think he barely says anything, if I remember right. Seth Green as Howard the Duck. And of course, Taika Waititi. How do I pronounce the first name of that?
I don't know. Waititi.
I know, yeah. Waititi is the last name.
Yeah.
As Korg. The only one that didn't come back, the only two that didn't come back was Glenn Close as Nova Prime, which is too bad because I think that would have been great.
And you know who replaced her?
I didn't write it down.
Her name is Julianne Grossman, and you might know her as the voice of the computer in Star Trek Discovery.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. She also has animation experience, but that's the one when I looked at her her resume that popped out to me.
Yeah. She was fine. Didn't have a whole lot, so it wasn't that crucial. But there were reasons I wasn't happy. I mean, I think I would have liked Glenn Close being back more, but only because I had problems with her character in the episode. But that has probably a lot less to do with the actress. And then, of course, we didn't have Vin Diesel doing Groot. But yeah, to be honest with you, I don't think it really mattered. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Groot is pretty easy to... you know, imitate. Okay, so you wanna start off?
Well, sure. I did like this episode quite a bit, and really the key to liking this episode is being a Blade Runner fan.
Amen.
Because this entire episode was basically an homage to Blade Runner, top to bottom. The look of it echoed a lot of the look of Blade Runner in terms of the overall feel, but also in terms of specific scenes,
yes,
you know, the shape of the city and a couple of, there was one particular sign I remember seeing that was very, I think, right out of Blade Runner.
Well, and her vehicle, the vehicles, the cop cars, the floating cop cars. Yeah.
Yeah. And this entire episode was basically a noir murder mystery type of an episode, which is what Blade Runner's all about. So this was just the... And Blade Runner...
Can I jump in with you on this? Since it's one of my points as well, we'll just kind of discuss it together. You know, the other reason I loved that is that, not counting the zombies from last season, because Marvel did a zombies comic book, Marvel Zombies comic, this is really, unless you can correct me, this is really the first What If episode that has gone outside of the MCU movie styling, you know what I mean? And reached into a different kind of genre to tell one of its stories. And I loved that. We discussed last episode, you know, things that they might do differently or new things they might introduce with season two. And to me, I saw this as a big change. You know what I mean? It wasn't a traditional kind of MCU story. This was like you're saying, a crime noir, Blade Runner-esque story. And that was unique to everything we've seen so far, I thought.
Well, that's interesting, because I don't know that I picked up that it definitely was a darker episode. But do you think that it differed a lot from the darker episodes that we had in the first season? You know, because there were some dark episodes, you know.
Yeah, but I'm not articulating it well. There was a conscious effort to make it sci-fi crime noir.
Yeah.
And that's a, you know, that's a style, that's a technique, that's a genre. And they haven't really reached out. I can't think of any episodes in season one that reached out to other genres or movie stylings and tried to emulate them in the telling of the story. You know what I mean? That's all.
No, I would agree with that. But I would say actually that one of the reasons I think it worked so well is that in getting to that kind of style, the style that they were already using, it wasn't that big a leap. You know, that there were some episodes, the darker ones, which had a flavor of this. But I think you're right. They really took it to the extreme here to really give you that Blade Runner feel. So yeah, this episode, probably the strongest part of it was the way it looked, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, by the way, before we get into the episode, if we want to start
beginning, we're already in the episode, bro.
Yeah, I know. But just to back up a little bit, on the opening credits, you know, in the episode, I noticed that I think this was different from last year. First of all, the very first image in the opening credits is Black Panther. And I wonder if that's a little bit of a tip of the head, you know, a little homage to Chadwick Boseman, the late Chadwick Boseman. Also, I noticed...
Could be, but isn't it, is it Chadwick's or is it his father?
Well, I don't think... that's a good question. Was the image... I don't think so. I think when they're doing like the This Is Marvel kind of thing...
Right.
I'd have to look a little closer. There's an easy way to tell because the father has the sash and he doesn't. Right. But, that's a good
They point. Also, if sure. you notice, they also change a little bit. Like, for instance, the Black Widow converts from her and with her red hair to her with her blonde hair and the Endgame outfit or Infinity War outfit.
I didn't catch that, but I did notice that they featured the Native American character, which I believe is in one of the later episodes.
Yeah.
So they've already worked her into the opening scene. So, I think if you slow it down and go frame by frame, I'll bet you there's a lot more to be caught there. I haven't done that, but maybe over the season we'll notice it more.
Yeah, definitely. I think her name is Cora, right? I don't remember seeing her, but I remember seeing her in The Shards. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, in The Shards is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, definitely saw that in Shards. I thought you were talking about the opening Marvel that has the main heroes show caps there, Iron Man, Black Widow, Black Panther, starts off with Black Panther.
Yeah, well,
then it breaks into The Shards.
At the beginning, that's what I was talking about. And then I switched down on you, man. I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's all right. I'm keeping up.
Yeah.
All right, keep going, bro.
Yeah, no, so otherwise, I think the look was to stand out in this episode. And I thought it was a good story. I liked the mystery of the story. I liked the triple cross. I thought that worked well. It was a very solidly written episode. And I liked the way it held thematically, the whole idea of, reaching for the light and being a story of redemption.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the twist. And I like being fooled. I mean, I didn't see it coming, that she was one step ahead. And then when it turned out she was, I was delighted by that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I loved Nebula in this. And I think that, she becomes a hero in this world as well. And she's a good person, clearly, who was abused by her father, but always ends up finding the light eventually. Is the message I got. You know what I mean? She starts out dark and evil and twisted, but basically because of what's been done to her. And yet, given her own, her own self-actualization, she becomes, she becomes a hero. She's clearly done. Also, I love this. To me, she seemed clearly done suffering from her past trauma. She no longer, looks upon her cybernetics as part of a burden to carry, or as a burden for her to carry. It seems like she's incorporates them more and much more holistically, and it's just part of her, She's kind of very comfortable in her own shoes, so to speak. It really made me feel that Nebula as a character could easily lead a solo film.
Yeah, I think so. And, with Karen Gillan, who
fantastic. Voiced her,
she was really carried the character. It was a delight to have her on the screen.
Yeah, I agree. Did you catch or did you feel that that opening shot of her floating, did that not remind you of Gamora floating in the debris in Guardians 1 or maybe even Thor floating in the debris in Infinity War? I saw it as being kind of similar to that.
Yeah, no, that's a good observation. I didn't.
I like how both these episodes and What If in general does a lot of that. They do little kind of not. I wouldn't really even call them Easter eggs. More just kind of tip of the hats or, flashbacks kind of not flashbacks, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure, like a visual homage.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. Perfectly. Perfect.
You know what I also like? This was something we saw last year when we saw the Guardians episode and Thanos was one of the Guardians instead of Drax. I kind of feel this time around we sort of had Howard the Duck playing the Rocket role.
No, absolutely.
And that's why I like that idea of what if that, and it's an idea that you see in science fiction that whenever you have a timeline, so to speak, sort of nature or the natural order tends to reassert itself in a similar pattern. So there's always going to be some wisecracking guy. If it's not Rocket, it's Howard the Duck. And I thought Seth Green did a good job as Howard the Duck, and he had some good lines.
Hasn't he been doing the voice since the beginning?
Yeah, he has.
Yeah,
But I think this was the biggest role.
Oh, absolutely, hands down. Yeah. Hands down. And I loved how he was presented in this episode, and I could easily see him taking on a larger role in the MCU as a result. You know, I have to admit, I was never a big fan. I'm never a fan of the character, period. But then I was never a big fan of him being, you know, an Easter egg in different films. But after this, I can see it, and I think it could be really good.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see him. It seems like there's been a bit of a Howard the Duck resurgence in the comics, and he's been appearing in the movie. So
now, clearly, they were trying, like you pointed out, which I thought was a great point, is that they were having Howard kind of fill the role of Rocket. So the question is, where is Rocket? Why is he not there? Why is Groot there, but Rocket's not there? You got any opinions about that?
Yeah, well, there was some massive thing that happened, you know, where Thanos gets killed because Ronan takes over. I think we're supposed to assume that people would have died in that kind of conflict. The one that, you know,
you mean the opening war from Ronan is inflicting on Xandor before they put the shield up.
That's right. You know,
I agree. I think either he's been lost or died or got separated before that shield closed.
I think so. And did they even mention, I'm trying to remember, why we don't have a Peter Quill? I guess we never, how does this work in terms of the timeline of the original Guardians film?
This would take place, I would assume, around the time of the original Guardians, you know, before the original Guardians takes place, because Ronan goes to Thanos, remember, at that one point, he kills his guard there or whatever, but he gets tasked with the mission to go get the stone.
Yeah, so wasn't
Peter, that's the scene, I think, where he's supposed to have killed him.
So then Peter Quill was already taken and part of the Guardians by that point, wasn't he? So then are we supposed to think he died in this conflict too?
I don't know. I don't think so. Clearly the Guardians weren't together.
Yeah, they were not.
Or if they were, Peter wasn't part of them. Or if he was, then he also got wiped out or something, because, you know, they did have Drax there.
That's right.
So you had Drax and you had, Groot. So you did have a number of, or a couple of the Guardians. So and of course, Nebula herself. I found the Ronan betraying Thanos as a believable twist.
Sure.
Based on the scene in Guardians where he kills Thanos' representative that we were just talking about. But I did find it a little hard to swallow that he could take out Thanos and Gamora and Nebula at the same time.
Yeah.
And probably the other Black Order members. You know, I would assume they would have been there as well, or had come quickly. But maybe not. I mean, they weren't there in that scene when we saw it in Guardians. So maybe they weren't, but neither was Gamora. So,
yeah, I remember the Black Order showing up in the Avengers movies.
They showed up in Infinity War first.
Yeah. So they weren't in the original Guardians movies anyway. Right. So I wouldn't.
No, they weren't in the original Guardians movie, but they were part of his Black Order. And then they refer to to Nebula as being part of the Black Order. And she's used to be. Remember, she says something like used to be or.
Sure.
So that was a bit, that's kind of a jump. I mean, Thanos is kind of billed as, at that point in time, Thanos was, you know, practically unbeatable without the fucking stones. So, that was a bit hard to swallow.
Yeah, and I would say, like, in the comic book universe, Thanos has always been a heavier hitter than Ronan.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Ronan's tough, but not that tough.
Maybe he got a lucky shot in, you know. That's a what if for another day, you know.
Yeah. Great to see Yon Rogg from Captain Marvel pop back up.
Sure.
I really enjoyed that. Because Marvel has so many wonderful villains to introduce in the MCU. We don't get old one-off villains popping back up in the movies very often. The exception being maybe Arnim Zola, who's been in a couple films.
Yeah.
But of course, in the comics, it happens all the time. But so I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and part of it, I guess, is, as we mentioned, it's played by Jude Law, who is a major A-list movie star, and I assume that he would add a lot to the budget of any show that he appears on.
Yeah.
So you could have him in the comic book, the character, because it's free, you know?
Right.
And I guess maybe his voice acting bill isn't as high as his in-person bill. So
no, I'm sure none of the voice acting is as big as the acting in live motion, action. But I do love this aspect of What If in general, that they can use it as a way to bring in villains and characters that perhaps have popped up in a single movie, but we haven't seen what's going on with them since.
Yeah.
Why do you think he was there? They don't really explain why he's there. I mean, the last we saw of him, Captain Marvel was sending him back to the Supreme Intelligence on Kree, and he had failed to capture her. And so I saw some speculation on Screen Crush. They were talking about that probably since, he was a loyal Kree warrior, he was probably involved in the war, and that, working with Ronan, and maybe he just got captured while, when the thing got shut down, when they closed it.
So he was on the wrong side of the fence.
Yeah, the shield. Right.
I could buy that. I mean, I give them, that's the kind of sort of change in the timeline, so to speak, that I could definitely buy. Because, when you have such a major event as a kind of a war, it gives you a lot more leeway to mix things up a little, I think, such as characters not being around or characters being present where you wouldn't normally expect them to. And I think that explanation that you just cited is a very reasonable one.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have to assume that though we're seeing one big change and its effect on a universe, there are all sorts of rippling changes that occur throughout the universe, because of that change. So this becomes its own alternate timeline. It doesn't mean everything else of that timeline stays the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Lots of other things change. I wonder too about when I think about that in terms of Steve Rogers going back to be with Peggy in the end of Endgame, and that's such a big change. It had to have created an alternate timeline and alternate changes to the history. And so that, you know what I mean? Like we were talking last week about the difference between timeline and universe.
Yeah.
But, think about that. He would know all the things that were going to happen with Hydra and all that stuff. And he could, interject himself in that somehow, or give her information so she could cut that stuff off early. So then they'd never have Hydra. I mean, all sorts of things would change.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to see a What If in the future that explores that. Or you could see a live-action movie coming out of that as well.
That I would love. I think, everybody's poo-pooing. Everybody's joined the poo-poo party now on anti-Marvel and especially the Disney Plus shows. I don't get it, but people love to hate. But I would love to see that as a Disney Plus series, because you got six stones. Six episodes, It's just, it's a natural. So, but since we brought up Steve, I'm going to ask a question I have for you. Have you noticed in general, in the What If series, both last season and the two we've seen this season, and from what we can tell from the previews of what's coming, we're not getting much Cap or Spider-Man.
Well, Spider-Man might be a rights issue.
Well, and something's up with Cap too, because we got Steve Rogers in two episodes, I think, but he's never been, we've never seen Cap as Cap. And I don't know. What do you think's going on with that?
Well,
I think it's a rights issue. You thought contract with Chris Evans.
It could be that, but one idea, and I'm not sure of the current status, but the next Cap movie is going to star Sam Wilson as Cap, isn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe they want to avoid the confusion of having Steve Rogers Cap out there, and maybe they'll see that as taking away some of the thunder and And why are we seeing, a black Captain America, even though there was a whole series about how he became Cap,
Look at you, big brain in it, man. hadn't occurred to me, but that makes a lot of sense.
Is New World Order still on schedule for release?
Recently they just moved it. They moved it. I never get this straight. Is back or forward when it's going to be later? Is that forward or is that back?
I guess
they move it. I mean, that's back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe they moved it back. I think it's 2025 now. I'm not positive.
Yes, you're right. February 14th, 2025.
And February is not. February is usually bad movies are released in February. Not very promising.
Yeah, although I was actually.
I'll bet it changes again, though.
Deadpool and Black Panther, I think, both came out in February. So maybe it's not the ghetto that it was once viewed as. But you're right. February, traditionally, across the movie industry, is where you put the movies you don't have so much faith in.
Yeah. But, again, just before we leave this point, in addition, we got one episode last season with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That was it.
Which episode was Spider-Man in last?
Zombies.
Oh, okay. Yes. That's
And we've got, as far as I can see, I think there's one episode that will have Spider-Man in it this season. Maybe Spider-Man is a Sony rights issue and that they have to pay. So they're not going to use them a lot. They'll use them in once or something.
Which is the episode, the 1602 episode?
I'm not positive, but I thought I saw clips of, or like his mask in something.
Okay. Cause he's in the original source material for that. That's why.
That's it. And then the other one is Iron Man. I mean, we got a whole episode with Tony Stark last season, but no Iron Man. And we're going to get Iron Man this season, I guess. But that's it. I mean, when you think about the main core, I mean, we've got a lot of Thor.
Yeah.
But of the main heroes, we've got a lot of Black Widow. But very little Cap, very little. All right. We spent way too much time on this. Okay.
No, that's right. Just one other thing. It could be because the two actors aren't under contract and they were reticent to put new people in the roles, right? Because isn't Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans not doing those roles, at least for
they're not doing the voice.
Yeah, but they're not doing the characters. They're not. There's no active movies with them right now.
No. So you think they're just trying to tone down people's desire to see them?
Yeah. Because they need to emphasize other parts of the MCU where they still have the actors playing the roles.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah,
that's that big brain go. All right, what do you got next on Nebula?
That's most of it. I thought I mentioned that I really enjoyed Howard as Rocket. He had some really funny lines. Throughout the episode.
So did Korg. I mean, I think Korg stole the show.
Yes, yes.
He was funny as hell.
I agree. He actually had a pretty, I think it's Taika Waititi, by the way.
Taika, you're right. Yeah. That's right.
You're right. He was a pleasure throughout the episode. It was nice the way they injected humor to contrast with the darker noir. This episode really held together well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I'll tell you where it fell down for me, though. Yeah. Was I wasn't buying the Nova Prime turned evil and selfish and horrible storyline.
Oh.
She seemed like a rock solid champion for for what's right in the Guardians film. I think it could have been done successfully though. They didn't need to have the twist at the end where she's like, and then, he's going to make me leader, forever, blah, 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 or whatever. I think if just Nova Prime makes the, she feels that her people are basically dying. The planet is self-imploding basically because of this self-imposed isolation. And she feels like the right thing to do to save her people and save her planet is to make a deal with Ronan. But Nebula knows that Ronan will destroy them ultimately. So when she beats Ronan, Nova Prime is basically indebted to her and kind of steps down as leader and instead of the twist that, she's made a deal with Ronan because she wants to ensure that she stays in power. It just, it was a really dark twisting of that character that I just didn't feel comfortable with.
Well,
what
I,
about
I,
you?
I don't know that they clearly had one of her motivations being that she wanted to stay in power, but I think that she also expressed the idea that, you know, they were, things were going bad. They weren't going to survive, in isolation, under the shield. And so I think it could be,
but that's enough. That's enough for her to make the case to Nebula and fight Nebula and say, no, you're wrong. This is our only solution. And I could see her being, you know, committed to that and fighting Nebula for, in, because of that commitment to that belief. But then to just add in that, you know, and he's going to make me leader forever. And she, you know, the shot of her is really, she looks all evil. And then she tries to shoot her and kill her. And it just, I wasn't buying it.
Yeah, though it's also in keeping with the basic traditions of noir. You know,
yes.
You have, if you really want to put it, she's the femme fatale, the one that betrays you know, the hero detective,
right.
The bogey right. character, who's Nebula in this case.
Right.
So it didn't bother me as well. Also,
Chinatown. Chinatown's a great one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I also struggle a little bit with the shield to keep Ronan from attacking. 15 years and he couldn't figure out how to break through that thing that, with all of the Kree power and technology. So a little bit of...
Yeah, I could see where it would strain the credulity a little bit. Try not to think that hard about it.
No, I mean,
it's
listen,
a fair criticism. It's a fair criticism.
Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed this episode tremendously. In fact, I liked it better than the next one, even though I love the next one. But it doesn't mean there aren't things that I didn't see that could have made it maybe a little bit stronger for me. I thought the animation here was just killer. I, as I stated in our beginning brief, you know, I thought it up things from previous episodes last season. You know, some of the transitions too with the camera work, where they, you know, they zoom in on her face and then the environment changes, you know, from where she is to she's in the car and then they pull out and she's trying, you know what I mean? Just cool things that they took time to incorporate that helped give an animated show, you know, a great look. The dark, the rain, the use of light, obviously the whole story about her coming to the light and being trapped in all this darkness, both metaphorically for her life and then also for what the planet's going through. They just did a really good job with that. The action sequences, they're definitely using mocap for those action sequences, I think.
What is it?
The action sequences, you know, when the fight scenes.
Yeah.
I definitely think they're using mocap where they're taking actors.
Oh, motion and, capture.
Stunt people. Yeah, motion capture.
Okay.
And having them act out the fight scene with those suits on, with the computer, you know, things on them that can download it right into the system so they can get the action correct. But then when they're just walking as characters, it looks more like it's CGI from, you know, the computer generated and a little stiff. But if they're going to spend the money, the action sequences are where to go. So
yeah,
with the mocap. So I love that. The sequences where she gets blasted, like when she's hooked up to the data core, they animated her so that the eyes went super large and circular. She really felt cybernetic. She really felt robotic in those sequences, much more than in the films, even though, you know, obviously we had that shot of her in Endgame where she's like this disassembled in midair, you know what I mean? Which was pretty gruesome, but this still, I felt like she really came off as a cybernetic entity, you know, in this, because of that animation.
Okay.
It wasn't clear to me if Yondu was keeping the intel hidden so Nova Prime wouldn't get it. And so in my mind, he's a hero. Or if he was hired to get the info for Nova Prime and they killed him after he completed the job. So basically, you know, a bad guy. And then I saw online a theory too that Nova Corps set him up and killed him and then planted that evidence on him so that she would find it. So that she would then go and try to find the shield core, Shield information. I don't know. What's your take on that? On Yondu?
Yeah, I didn't come away thinking it was clear he was being a bad guy, you know. But I could see that interpretation. You know, it was early on in the plot, and I didn't really focus that much on it.
Yeah,
I think it works either way. I think both interpretations are valid.
Yeah, I like the theory that they just killed him because he was a friend of hers, and they knew that that would motivate her to seek out this information and solve this crime. And
yeah,
I didn't really understand why they couldn't get access to this stuff. I guess because she was a what did they say? What was it? It was a Omega cybernetic unit or something.
Yeah, they said they need. Well, I think what they said was we needed a cyborg, and I guess right. Are we supposed to think that she's the only cyborg in town? That's a little unclear, but did they say like an Omega level cyborg?
They call the core thing greets her and says, you know, it's okay for you to connect because you're an Omega level cybernetic unit or whatever.
Yeah.
And which is interesting use of that term, because in Marvel, Omega is always referenced in the comics, at least X-Men, yeah. Mutants,
the so most powerful.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
That was kind of overall, again, just, I love that. I love the episode. I love the look of it, the feel of it. I thought Karen's dialogue delivery was great. I really felt like we were in that Blade Runner universe, which I loved.
Yeah. Yeah. That for me, that was the single best thing about the episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, throughout it worked well. You know, right down to just having a consistent theme. And the solution was a character-based solution, you know.
Yeah.
That, she solves the mystery because she sees that Nova Prime was acting out of character with her reference about by any means necessary. So,
right.
And I think that's always a stronger story where the resolution flows out of character as opposed to just the action, you know.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely agree. Yeah. Absolutely agree. Also, I think it was cool when they all get together, the Korg and Meek and Howard and Nebula and they and Groot, and then they have that cool action pose, and Korg is like, "Yeah, we all look so cool."
I actually had that exact note. It said, "Right, so we all look cool."
Yeah.
It was obviously
you know, that's the new Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, and we had talked about like identifying our favorite quotes in these episodes, and that was one of mine from this one. I also liked Howard the Duck's dismay at the machines paying out. He goes, "They weren't supposed to pay out." You see all the. Yeah. So that was good. But yeah, you're right.
I liked when Nebula said, they said something about, is this a problem or something? And she says, "This is Xandor. There's always a problem." Something like that. That was a great line too.
Very good.
Yep. Okay. So let's take a break and we'll be back to discuss the next episode. Okay, so we're back, and we're talking about the first two episodes of What If Season 2, and we just finished recapping and going through our thoughts on Nebula joining the Nova Corps. What if Nebula joined the Nova Corps? And so now, Lenny, you want to bring us into the next one?
Sure. Episode 2 of Season 2, What If Peter Quill Attacked Earth's Mightiest Heroes? In an alternate 1988, Peter Quill is taken by the Ravengers to his father, Ego, who urges him to help continue the expansion. 6 months later, after ravaging several worlds, including Jotunheim and Asgard, Peter targets Earth. In response, Peggy Carter and Howard Stark assemble a new team of Avengers. Bill Foster, King T'Chaka of Wakanda, Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier, Mar-Vell, who's Wendy Lawson, and a reluctant Hank Pym, who brings his daughter Hope along. This episode brings back a lot of actors from the MCU. Michael Douglas was excellent as Hank Pym Ant-Man, Haley Atwell, always a pleasure as Peggy Carter, and they got Kurt Russell back as Ego.
Key.
Yeah,
so
he's excellent. Chris Hemsworth plays Thor. Lawrence Fishburne comes back as Bill Foster, Goliath. Sebastian Stan as Bucky Barnes.
Not a lot of lines.
No,
not a lot of lines
true.
For Bucky, but powerful ones.
Yeah. Also, John Slattery rehashes his Howard Stark role from the movies. And Atwanda Kani, is that the right way to pronounce it? As King T'Chaka.
Not sure.
The Black Panther. So that's the overview for the episode. So what'd you think of it, Kirk?
Also, Jotunheim is the way you pronounce.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to bust your chops on that. I thought it was great. I did like Nebula's episode more, but again, because it was different, I felt this was a little bit more consistent with what we had gotten last season, which is great. Loved it. And wouldn't want everything to be different. In terms of styling, I think that overall it was wonderful to see some of these heroes that we've met, like Bill Foster in action, or even see Hank Pym in action. I thought that was cool. I think that this episode kind of encapsulates one of the best parts of the What If framework. With its stories, we get to see characters, both villains and heroes that we know about or have met at the end of their careers, and get to see them in their prime, like Hank Pym, like I just said, Bill Foster, King T'Challa. We met him, but he was an old man. Mar-Vell, again, at the end of her career. And then in contrast, Hope and Peter as children, or Peggy and Howard, who are at the very end of their career. So, I think that's just a great aspect of the What If design, the chance to see some of these people that we've met at a point in their history, and get to see them in points that we had not ever seen and we're never going to see in the movies, most likely.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was one of the strongest episodes for the entire series. I really liked the way they took, and this was really a what if kind of idea. They changed one small point, the point where Yondu decides to turn Peter Quill in, and then everything else flows from there. And the whole idea of them forming an earlier Avengers, instead of Nick Fury forming the Avengers, it's Peggy Carter, and who she picks. I thought that the choices that they picked were interesting picks, and I thought that they really thought it out. They really did. I think that the Avengers that they ended up picking made perfect sense for that time. And they also, one of the strengths I find of the Marvel universe is that there really is a timeline out there. This episode takes place right before the Ant-Man movie, which I think was in 1989. It was a year after Hank's wife Janet died, which was identified in that movie as 1987. So right. they have this consistency in a history, which I really like. One of the questions, though, that this raises for me, and this is a question that you see in the comic books, is as time passes in the real world, is the MCU going to have to realign its timeline? In particular, the Iron Man movie came out around 2007, I believe. Is that right?
I don't know.
Are we supposed to think that 16 years have passed in the Marvel Universe? Is it real time? Because I'm looking at Peggy in this movie, right? And supposedly, I think the Captain America movie takes place, the first Avenger takes place, I think, around 1943 or so. I think they moved it up a little from the comic book, which takes place in 41 before America entered the war. So if this is 45 years later, 1988, how old is Peggy supposed to be? I mean, she would have to be, I think, in her 70s, and she didn't quite look in her 70s in this episode. So
no.
I think that you're going to find the MCU is butting up against the exact same problem that the comic book universe has, and they're going to have to start playing a little fast and loose with the time to have it all make sense. Like, for instance, you know, the Iron Man's origin's been moved several times over the course of the comic books, from being in from Vietnam to the Iraq War and even right. later. So I wonder if we're going to see that in the MCU. But overall, though, my
guess, if I had to guess, is that they're going to just reset everything with Secret Wars.
Ah.
And so all of that timeline will no longer matter. It'll be the new timelines. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So otherwise, like I said, I liked the choice of the characters. I liked seeing Howard Stark in there. I was kind of expecting Howard Stark, you know, why didn't they bring the Hydra Stomper out of retirement? I was expecting to see Howard Stark put on some kind of a armor and be like sort of the Iron Man of this time. but instead, he kind of played sort of himself, I guess. So, but that was one thought I had. I liked seeing, oh, so here's a change that they made between the comic, I guess, and the show. It's T'Chaka's father who gave the vibranium Captain America's shield.
Yeah.
I know that at least in one story, in Ultimate Captain America, there was a Ultimate Universe story which had it was T'Chaka who gives the vibranium, and so now they've kind of changed the timeline a little on there. Seeing T'Chaka was excellent. Bill Foster. As Goliath, and it was sort of nice. We got to see Ant-Man and Goliath in the same episode.
I really
liked that. And then the Winter Soldier. Oh man, when he showed up, I was like going, whoa. You know, I try to stay as spoiler free as I can. Did they show him, I guess, in the trailer for the episode? Like, did you know he was?
Yeah, I think
there?
He in the trailer for the season. I believe that we saw a picture of his face.
Yeah, so I guess I may have seen that. I try not to focus that much. I know some people do frame-by-frame analyses of the trailers, but I kind of like the surprise. And when I saw Bucky show up, I really liked that a lot. And then Thor, it was great to see Thor show up. You know, the beauty of Thor is that he's a god, so he's been around, like, forever. So I assume we're going to see him. I don't know if this was in the preview too, in 1602 episode that's coming.
I would hope so. Yeah, I would hope so.
He'll just be a younger Thor, you know, because he's been around.
I loved this version of Thor, and I think that you know, it was so much better than last season's goofy, spoiled party animal Thor. You know, that didn't run well with me.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess the point is that this Thor must have had a Loki brother. and that it's the Loki brother that helps make for a more, I don't know, traditional Thor.
Well, I think also the fact that this Thor had been through a brutal war in which most of the worlds had been wiped out, including Asgard.
Yeah, most likely he's lost his father and his brother.
Yeah.
And his mother, probably.
Yeah, so I think that would mature him up a bit. You know, definitely not going to be the beer-boozing pot-belly Thor.
You know? Right, right. Okay. It was much more the Thor of his second movie.
Yeah, and I didn't know
dark,
he was going to...
Dark World.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly right. And I didn't know that he was going to show up either, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
When he showed up, I went, whoa! You know, I kind of like, you know, one way I judge the TV that I watch is how many whoa moments they give me, you know? And in this one, we got I woed when Bucky showed up, and I woed when Thor showed up. So I really like that. You know, this is a little reminiscent of in the comic book What If. There was a What If the Avengers had formed in the 1950s, and they had the 3D Man and Robot Man. I think that's the character's name. So there is a precedent for this idea of Avengers forming at a different time.
I think also, you know, the Avengers have always, I mean, the origin of the Avengers was always the main Iron Man, Thor, Wasp and Ant-Man. And who was the other one? Was it Hulk? No, Cap came later. Hulk. Yeah. Hulk. So there's some, you know, and that was kind of the initial core, and then they added Cap and got rid of Hulk, and then over time other people like Hawkeye and everybody else came in. But I think it's probably they like adding Thor because it gives that every Avengers should have at least one of the originals.
Yeah.
You know, this had the Ant-Man, of course, and Wasp. Well, it didn't have, well, kind of had Wasp, I guess. And, so that, I think that's why they want to make sure he showed up.
Well, and it's nice that they, you know, Ant-Man is an original Avenger from the comic books. So, you know, it's nice that he gets his props in this reality.
Yeah. In other words, I think it's kind of, you got to have, yeah, exactly. Because last season we saw him turn into a horrible villain. So, you know, here he's a great dad and a superhero.
That's right.
This episode, more than any other so far, in my opinion, really benefited from having actual actor voices.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, imagine if Ego didn't sound like Kurt Russell. It just wouldn't have been as good. You know what I mean? Kurt Russell has such a kind of unique sound to his voice and his delivery. And, I think it wouldn't have been as good. So.
Yeah, and Michael Douglas as, you know, Hank Pym. I mean, he's in the movies, but here he's front and center, you know, he's the hero. So I really enjoyed that as well. I also thought that they did a great job with the whole idea of Hope Van Dyne befriending Peter Quill. It gave the episode an emotional core. And, you know, I had talked about how I like when the resolution flows out of character. That's exactly what we had here, the way we see Hope bonding with Peter Quill over their lost mothers and the Walkman. I thought that really bonded the entire episode together in a satisfying way.
No, I agree completely, and I think that I love the choice to tell this story in the 80s and using 80s music, and therefore being able to have the Walkmans. You know, it's so true to Peter Quill's story. I think the implication is that by Ego taking away his Walkman and his music. Right at the beginning is what kept him in touch. And those are the things that keep him in touch with his humanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, music was his mother to Peter, and his love for his mother was what made a good person out of him. So, you know, remember in the MCU movie, when Peter finally gets the power to stand up to Ego, he says, "You shouldn't have killed my mother and you shouldn't have squished my Walkman." So for Peter, the two are connected. So this Ego really screwed himself when he destroyed Peter's Walkman first thing. It was never going to work out for him.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I thought the fight scenes were very cool. The big Ego with the Ego miniatures, almost like when they were swarming over Bill Foster's Giant Man, or Goliath, if you call him that. It was kind of ironic because, you know, you have Ant-Man as one of the characters, and he's being beset by what basically looked like a horde of ants. So I thought that was...
Yeah, I thought it was visually, it was really cool, but it's one thing that I was... I have. It's not really a crit, it's a question. Does it make sense that Ego could manipulate the Earth the way he manipulated his home planet? Because it seemed like the way he was fighting them was how he fought on Ego against the Guardians. But he fought like that because he was on Ego.
Yeah.
And Ego and he were basically one. Whereas on Earth, he's just Ego.
Oh.
And in fact, he's weaker being further away from the planet, if I remember the correct storyline. You know what I mean? He has to always go back to the planet to recharge.
No, that's a good point. I guess I didn't remember enough from Guardians 2 to remember exactly what his power set was to identify that they were stretching it a bit for this episode.
Yeah. So that was, you know, if I had to criticize that sequence, that would be the only thing I would say. It was cool though. And I loved, you know, I think it's the second time we've seen a giant man character, Goliath in this case, have to deal with, you know, lots of human ants, like people climbing up them, you know, and the zombies when we got giant man, you know, they did the same thing. So kind of a little bit of a flashback to that. Did you want to mention the crashing pod?
The
Easter egg, really, for the way that Peter's crashing pod where it lands.
Oh, just that it lands right in front of Grand Central Station, which is exactly the location where the Chitauri land, and we have the Battle of New York in the first Avengers movie.
Right. Yeah. And that's right where they do the circle camera pan, and essentially that's when the Avengers become the Avengers.
Yeah. There were a lot of little things like that. We got to see Project Pegasus showed up again. We've seen that.
Yeah. Now, we heard that in Iron Man. I don't remember. I think it was Iron Man 2. I'm not sure. But he says pull all the files on, and he lists a bunch of things, and one of them was Project Pegasus. And then did we get some of that in Captain Marvel when we met Mar-Vell? Were they calling it Pegasus then? I don't remember.
Yeah, I it seems to me that we've heard the name Project Pegasus in the Marvel Universe. It might have been in connection, was it maybe in the first Avengers movie when they're analyzing the Tesseract. Was that at Pegasus? I know I've heard it before. I can't pinpoint exactly.
No, I know we heard it once with Tony Stark in one of the Iron Man movies, and he's doing research and he calls up the Jarvis and asks him to get him all the files on three different things. And one of them was Project Pegasus. But I don't remember where else we might've seen that. Here was a kind of funny thing. I thought the YouTube review channel Screen Crush pointed out, that Howard Stark suggests that they take Ego's seedling and stuff it down a garbage disposal, which is exactly what Tony Stark says to Doctor Strange in Infinity War about the Time Stone.
Oh, that's right.
Almost verbatim. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
That was a cool thing that they caught. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Another Easter egg was the holding tank for Peter at Camp Pegasus is exactly like the one used in the Avengers movie to hold Loki that was supposedly built for the Hulk, which means they actually, at least in this universe, had built it a lot earlier for something. Maybe a Hulk earlier. I don't know.
Sure. We also got to see the cat from Captain Marvel. I guess it's the
Flarkin. Flarkin.
Yeah.
Goose.
So that was good.
Yeah, that was cool. So, I liked that.
You know, one question I had, though, I kept expecting it to show up, and it didn't. Where were the Eternals during all this?
You know, the other day I was thinking about this, like, and I think it was because I was responding to some posts on the Podcastica Facebook page regarding the Marvel's success or failure, depending on how you look at it. Versus other movies. And it got me thinking about, you know, I can't think of there've been Marvel movies I liked more than others, but I've never sat in a Marvel movie and been like, ugh, this is horrible. Or I can't, you know, unlike DC, my God,
Yeah. You
know what I mean? With the exception of Nolan's Batman movies, you know, practically I had that reaction to every DC movie, although this Flash one I enjoyed. But if I had to pick my least favorite movie of Marvel, or one that I think was kind of really an epic fail for me, it was the Eternals. I just so many characters, such a long history, so many unanswered questions as to where the hell were they. Their power sets are kind of weird. It wasn't, you know, it was just a terrible movie. And I think you're pointing out one of the big issues with it. And that's that, you know, where the hell were these people? Where were they during the Infinity War? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. Well, that's more of a Marvel question, I guess. But I wouldn't blame. Well, first of all, while I don't think The Eternals is one of the stronger Marvel movies, I do think that it is unfairly overly maligned. I did not think that was a terrible movie. I thought it was an okay movie, you know, and I kind of liked the characters. And I guess the in-universe response is, if I'm remembering correctly, because I've only seen it once when it came out, weren't they like hiding from the Celestial for a long time? They were having a hidden existence, so I guess that's why they didn't appear, if I'm going to explain it.
Were they hidden, or were they just kept in the dark about who they were and what their purpose was?
Oh, maybe that was it too. They didn't have the memory, so then that would explain it. But that doesn't explain why the writers didn't use one of the tools in their toolbox. And now, from a real-world perspective, you could be right. The reason why they didn't use those particular tools is because their movie didn't do very well. It was poorly reviewed. So yeah. They figure, well, let's not use the least popular characters we have because they're going to torpedo the show as well. But yeah. That was kind of a question that bothered me a little bit. Because they did mention that that Ego's a celestial, which I hadn't even remembered that. Do they? I don't think they mention Ego in the Eternals movie, do they? But they do mention the Celestials, so...
Yeah, which is kind of weird. I mean, is he he's not a celestial in the comics, is he?
No, I don't think so.
Because when you say celestials, you think of the celestials. They're a race of I don't want to say robotic, but they're those huge entities that look like robots, drawn Kirby-esque or created Kirby-esque.
Created by Kirby.
Beautiful. Yep, and they're cool and they're beautiful, and I love that aspect of the story. Although we've got this giant celestial sticking up out of the ice and on the earth now, and nobody's mentioned it in any movie since.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, there's this huge alien the size of a freaking continent sticking up out of the ice and nobody's mentioned it. But anyway,
Where was that alien sticking out of the ice?
I don't think it was the Arctic. I think it was something like the Indian Ocean or something.
No, from what was that in the Eternals movie or was it?
How it ends.
Oh, like, I didn't remember.
He starts to be born.
Yeah.
And they shut it down. And then he's kind of stuck in between.
Yeah. Well, we have a celestial head in the Guardians of the Galaxy. That's
right.
That's
but again, that head looks like it belonged to one of the Celestials that we've seen in the Eternals. So to call Ego a Celestial, I don't really understand that. Other than maybe the Celestials start out as this kind of like floating consciousness, right? In Guardians, they kind of made it look like a brain that built in a planet around itself. And then they become those robotic things. But maybe this one was really early. Maybe Ego was super early and didn't have any model to form after. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know why they made him celestial. But I don't know exactly what they do in this comic. I mean, I've only read Ego's story once or twice, and I think it was in Marvel.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel.
No, yeah. As far as I know, I mean, I read the Eternals, the Celestials were introduced in the Jack Kirby Eternals series, and as far as I know, they had no relationship to Ego, the living planet, who showed up about 20 years later, earlier in Thor, I believe in the mid-60s or late 60s. Is where
that's his first appearance?
Ego's first appearance was in Thor. And then the Eternals, Jack Kirby's Eternals series, I think was around 75, 76, so about 10 years later.
And did that introduce the Celestials?
That's right. Right. The basic story is that the Celestials created life on Earth, that they seeded the planet with the genetic codes that would become.
Oh, so then that ties into Ego and his seeding.
Oh, that's right. And they put in three races. They put humans, Eternals, and the Deviants. And
holy shit, that was some bad CGI in Eternal. Come on, the Deviants. That was horrible.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Probably the worst CGI of any Marvel movie.
Yeah. So, well, it was COVID time.
Since we're talking about Ego, though, I'm sorry, what?
It came out during COVID time. We'll give him a pass.
Thank goodness at least something was coming out then.
That's right.
I'll even take bad Marvel over anything else. Do you think that it's possible that Ego is going to become this season's multiversal threat like Ultron?
Well, they certainly left it open, right? Because, he's out there and... it could be a sequel there.
I think that's why we got him at this point. And they didn't destroy him. They didn't really destroy him. They just stopped him for the time. So that'd be my guess. I'm trying to think of who else might be of that night. It just seems like he's big enough to do that.
Yeah. I wonder, that makes sense. Although, I mean, each of these episodes I wonder, are they going to tie it together like they did last year? Because last year,
don't know.
The way they tied it together is, you had sort of a villain that was big enough that it could step outside of the multiverse. And I don't know that we've seen anything from Ego that would suggest that. He's out and about and free, but only in this timeline, right? In this reality, which, however you want to distinguish it. So the next episode, he's not out and around because it's a different universe, you know, different timeline. So I don't know. Unless we come back to get a sequel to this episode.
Well, it may not be this Ego. We may see it meet another Ego
from
another alternate universe.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, that's right. They could show this. That's an interesting idea. So then maybe we could see that. The other little dangling plot thread that they left that I thought we might see again sometime in the future, either in a sequel to this episode or, I guess, a closely parallel world, is the alteration in the Winter Soldier that he's been... That the Bucky, part of him has been reawakened earlier.
Yes. Yes.
And I thought that was an interesting.
My guess is that if they put together another multiversal Avengers at the end, like they did in the first season, which I hope they do, and I think they will. My guess is he'll be on it.
Yeah, that's good. And you got Sebastian Stan. He seems to be willing to keep reprising the role. He came back for the...
Why not, man?
Yeah.
Money in the bank.
Money in the bank. I really like the scene between Howard Stark and Bucky and the way Howard Stark evokes Cap.
Absolutely.
And it had a great line where he goes, 50 years later, Captain America is still saving my ass.
He's a Steve Rogers, but yeah, that was definitely the best line. The only other good one I really loved was when Peter says, actually, old man, my mom says, I'm a Star-Lord.
I had that as one of my favorite lines. And as a parent, I love the line. You probably liked it too. You think a child would be so willing to fight his own father? You're not a parent, are you, Wendy? Any of our listeners who are parents totally understand that line.
That's right. I think it's cool that we are getting a lot of Agent Carter. Here we get her as the founder of S.H.I.E.L.D., not Captain Carter.
Yeah.
But she really seems to be one of the most important and significant characters in the MCU, at least not in the MCU maybe, but in the What If universe.
Yeah.
Or stories. Almost like she's a nexus being that events kind of gravitate around. You know, I don't know if you've noticed that.
Go ahead. Yeah, you know, but also there is a reference in the Ant-Man movie to her being the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, you know, that Ant-Man movie is a key to this episode, you know, because...
You're talking about the flashbacks in that Ant-Man movie.
That's right.
When we go back and see Howard and Hank having the fight in the S.H.I.E.L.D., what's that thing called, the Skrillion or something? But, I remember that. And she was there. What? Triskelion?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. She was there, and she looked like that with the gray in her hair and stuff like that. So
yeah, but I love the actress, and I'm all in favor of any use. And I think that her Captain Carter episode was one of the more popular episodes last year that everyone liked.
I also love your theory as to why they're not hyping up Captain America, and this ties into that possibly because they're kind of showing us an alternate Captain America. So we get Captain Carter instead of Captain America. And she's, you know, kind of crucial to all the stories, or at least the general thread throughout, as opposed to Steve, you know, as opposed to Captain America.
Yeah.
So they kind of get that Cap quality into the stories, but they don't reinforce the old Cap, leaving room for the new Cap.
And we are going to have more Captain Carter later this season because there's a Captain Carter centered episode. So
and to that point too, if you were to introduce the Steve Rogers Captain America, that would kind of steal a lot of thunder from her, I think.
Sure.
So
cool. So
yeah, great. So excellent episode. Love the closing image of them walking, you know, again, just like the shot we had in the Nebula episode of the collected team, you know what I mean? So the Avengers of the 1980s. That was pretty cool. And think about how powerful Peter Quill is going to be in that universe as a superhero.
Yeah.
I mean, with those powers, you know what I mean? But then he will have to go back to Ego to get charged up, I guess, right? That's what they said in the movies.
Yeah, so, or otherwise maybe he'll just become Star-Lord, you know, and he'll be Star-Lord will be part of the Avengers as opposed to the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take another quick break. Then we're going to come back for a new little segment we've got and then some listener comments, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm here with Lenny, and we've decided we want to add a new segment here that we're going to do. It'll be brief, but after we review the episodes, we're each going to come up with a what-if premise, something fun to do that, you know, we all kind of do, I think, as we're watching these kind of shows. What if this happened? What if that happened? So we're not going to go into great detail, but just the premise. So, Lenny, you want to start us off? What's your what-if premise for...
Sure. So I'm going to, in a way, steal one from the comic books that was used, but I think that I'd be interested to see the MCU version. What if Captain America was not frozen at the during or the end of World War II, and Steve Rogers, as Captain America, continued instead of being on ice for all those years? And I think, you know, one of the things that I like about the What If comic book, which we haven't yet seen in the What If show, is that they can show you time passing over the decades. And you could see the ripples in the timeline. All of the What Ifs, I think, to date have all had the little change, but then the episode itself always takes place in the same time frame. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so what I'd like to see, you know, Captain America, he could be fighting communists in the 50s as the Captain America of, well, it wasn't Steve Rogers Captain America did in the comic book. And then maybe ultimately he becomes the spy master instead of Peggy Carter. And, you know, flashing back to this episode we just talked about today, we had the issue of the rumors that Bucky was alive and the Winter Soldier. If Captain America had not been frozen and he heard those rumors, you know that he would not have stopped to investigate those rumors. And he probably would have found the Winter Soldier decades before he was unfrozen. So then you could have Bucky or Winter Soldier Bucky becoming Buckified, so to speak.
I think you just coined a new word.
At an earlier Buckified. Time. Yeah, so you'd have Winter Soldier earlier. Captain America and Bucky would be back together again. And I think that would be a lot. And then it would play out over the Captain Marvel movie that comes out earlier in time. That's an interesting premise I would like to see.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Thank you.
My what if idea is actually compliments of my son. he generated this the other day after we got done watching the Nebula episode, and I was like, oh my God, that's great. I'm going to steal that. Can I use that? So props to my son, Jake, who came up with this. What if the heroes that got snapped at the end of Infinity War were the ones that actually remained instead? So, how would the story of them trying to go back in time to stop Thanos and reverse what he did, how would that change? And just as a reminder, the core group would probably be Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Peter Quill, Groot, Drax, Mantis, T'Challa, Sam Wilson, Hank, Janet, and Hope Van Dyne.
And you'd have Nick Fury being able to guide them.
Yep, Nick Fury. I didn't even think of that one. But it occurred to me that Doctor Strange, with his knowledge of the Time Stone, now granted the Time Stone wouldn't be there at that point, but there might be ways to go through other dimensions or other realities to get another time stone. Or also you've got Hank, Janet, and Hope, who are quantum realm knowledgeable. And that's ultimately how they did the time travel in the first movie. with the original crew. So I think you've got, you know, you would still have people capable of coming up with that solution or finding another way to do it. And how would it be different? I think that would be really cool to see.
I really like that. And it would have the advantage of, you know, giving us another version of one of the best of the Marvel movies, you know.
Yeah.
The end game. Yeah, no, that's an interesting idea.
Okay, so we'll try and do that every week. And so now we're going to move on to listener feedback. Lenny, you want to start off that?
Yeah, well, since we're recording today on yesterday's episode, as well as the episode that came out today at 3 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, we want to let listeners know that they can still write in later, and we will read and discuss your comments from this episode at our next recording.
Amen. And, you know, we do want to hear from you about your opinions of the What If episodes or about our coverage of the show. So if you want to leave us feedback, please reach out to us on podcastica.com, where you can record and leave a voice message or write out your thoughts. You can also email us at talkpodcastica. We also are putting up posts for each episode on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups podcastica, where you can comment and we'll read your comments on the podcast.
Yeah, and that email address again is talk@podcastica.com.
What, did I slur it?
Maybe. Yeah. I would never say that, but maybe some of our listeners, that'll be their comment. No.
All right, so we're starting off. We've got some feedback from a good friend of mine, Sydney, from who co-hosted with me and Alex on the Lokiverse podcast. Great to hear from you, Sydney. Thanks for chiming in here. She wrote us about all of these comments are about the Nebula episode. As Lenny pointed out, please if you have comments about the second episode of the Avengers episode in the 80s. You know, just go ahead and put them in either of those areas we talked about, the emails or the voicemails, and we'll read them next week or next time we record, which is in like a couple of days. But anyway, Sydney wrote, she had some issues with the Nebula episode, not her favorite. Let's just put it that way. this is pretty bleak here. I don't think Ronan can kill Thanos and Gamora. I think I agree. I was a little put off by that. Thanos, Gamora, and beat Nebula at the same time, and possibly even the other Black Order. But if Nebula was left over after that defeat, it would never have made sense for Nova Prime to take her in. I don't know. I think Nova was a good person who believed in people and saw good in people. And I don't know why she went so dark after the time on the planet there. But Yondo's arrow has never been a thumb drive before, so that was really hard to believe. Why is Howard the Duck on Xandar? Groot is there without Rocket? Why? Well, we talked about that a little bit. And I think the same with Howard the Duck. You know, it's... all sorts of things change in an alternate universe, not just the one thing that changed it. You know what I mean? From our reality.
For sure. And I would take issue at that central idea of why would Nebula be taken in? Because I think one of the core ideas of the Marvel Comics in general and the MCU is the idea that that people can be redeemed, that even the worst villains can turn around and become the greatest heroes. I mean, look, that's the story of the Winter Soldier, right? So I don't buy the criticism that taking in Nebula doesn't make sense.
No, I agree. I agree. Why was Yon Rogg imprisoned on Xandar? I think we mentioned
that
most likely he just got caught, I think, behind enemy lines, so to speak.
It's a war.
And if he is imprisoned there, why would Nebula break him out to help with sensitive defense software codes? He's a Kree emperor. I don't think he's an emperor, but definitely a Kree soldier or high-ranking soldier. I think, you know, I saw somebody, I think it might have been Screen Crush, talk about this. Their opinion was that she needed to find out, and to your point earlier about the noir story kind of format, is that, you know, you've got this person at the top who's who's kind of running everything, but you don't know who it is. That's kind of the mystery, and that the protagonist is trying to uncover. She needed to uncover who was running this, you know, who was behind all of this. She had to get to Nova Prime. She didn't know it was her. Maybe she suspected it was her, but she needed proof of that. And I think involving Jan Rog helped that move along. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, also, Jan Rog was from the Ronin side of the war, right? So, right. I mean, this would be her proof that she, you know, to Ronin, that that she's willing to, you know, come over and betray, basically, her people. So, you know, that would make sense to use the...
Well, right, in terms of Nova, but I think she's saying, why did Nebula break him out? Why didn't she just go on her own?
No, I thought that she was pointed that way by Nova Prime. Wasn't there, I remember there was a line of dialogue to that effect that
when Nova, she's in the car?
Yeah, that Nova Prime manipulated it so that Nebula would have to go to him. But I don't quite remember
the line there either. There was direction there from her, but I don't remember specifically. Maybe it was there.
That was definitely part of Nova Prime's plan. So the question is, did her plan make sense? That's a whole other criticism, but
right,
it wasn't an accident that she went there.
And I think she was, she says, but then of course she supposedly knew he was going to backstab her. I don't see the point of the triple cross, but again, I think that was because she didn't know for sure. She needed evidence. She suspected Nova Prime was involved. Yeah. We didn't know she suspected Nova Prime was involved, but we find out at the end that she did. And why? To your point, when she, you know, tells her that, you know, use any means necessary, break the code, in other words, so that she's like, okay, this doesn't sound right. But she needed a way to prove that, and Jan Rog kind of led her to that.
Well, another explanation is that she had this plan where she was willing to open up the gate slightly because she knew the ship would be coming in, and then she crushed it because she maintained control over the shield. So maybe that was her plan.
Yeah. Nova Prime selling out to Ronin made no sense. Did she try to fix any of the violence and crime that we never actually see? Did she not realize that Ronin would just kill everyone? We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that it's realistic that things could have gotten so bad. I mean, I think Sydney's feeling was that they didn't really show things being so horrible enough that Nova Prime would want to do something as crazy as surrender. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a case can be made for that. But I think it is also, you know, sometimes a leader has to choose to surrender, you know, to save everybody, as opposed to just letting, you know, everyone die. So that didn't not fit for me, but I didn't like the added twist of her being kind of evil and wanting to do it for her own self-power. And,
yeah.
But anyway, all right. So next we have, we got a comment from Greg, and it's an audio comment, our first audio comment. So freaking psyched. So I'm going to play this and then we'll respond.
Hello. What if cast? I don't remember what it's called. This is Greg. So regarding the Nebula Nova Corps episode, the first episode, I absolutely loved the old-timey detective, like the grittiness to it. Like even it almost seemed like the animation was put together that way. All of the darker backdrops, the daunting music. I thought it was really, really well done. It very much reminded me of the Telltale game, A Werewolf or A Wolf Among Us. A Wolf Among Us, yeah. I thought it was great. I mean, the double cross, the triple cross, the quadruple everything. I like that they're pulling kind of main characters from several different storylines. I'll be honest, if I hadn't seen that it was Jude Law in the credits, I wouldn't have recognized Jan Rog as anybody. I mean, I thought the super team of Groot and Howard and Korg, you know, and then I don't remember what Korg's little buddy's name is, but regardless, that I really like the style, the and look forward to hearing you guys talk about it. All right, see ya.
Thanks, Greg. That was awesome. Meek is the little friend, the little guy with the cleavers chopping up the fish in the bar there scene. What do you think of Greg's comments?
I think he's right on point. You know, he liked it the way we liked it. Yeah. And to answer his question, we are who is watching The Watcher?
Greg, your voice, you should be a watcher. Your voice is like perfect for The Watcher. I agree. I think, you know, Lenny and I are in agreement with you that the whole design of it, the look of it, the feel of it, the double, triple crosses, all that stuff. We loved it too. Lenny, you want to move us to the next?
Sure. Our next comment is from Danielle Dement Joost, or it could be Hoost.
Joost, maybe? I don't know.
Sorry for mispronouncing your name, Danielle.
Sorry, Danielle.
So here's what Danielle has to say. I don't think it was great. Unfortunately, a little boring. Okay.
That's too bad. Sorry.
Well, you know, that the beauty of the anthology series, like What If, is if you don't like one of the episodes, next week's going to have nothing to do with it, generally.
Right.
And right. You can get right back on it. And as it turns out, in my opinion, next week's was even an even better episode.
Excellent. I agree. Thanks, Danielle, for writing in. Mark McBurney writes, yeah, I was not a fan of this episode. You simply can't have the Nova Corps without Richard Rider. Mm. And didn't really make sense as Ronan never had the chance to betray Thanos, although I would have preferred that as an episode. I did like the look of a broken down Xander, so at least it had one positive. So Mark didn't care for the episode that much either. I totally understand his difficulty with the Nova Corps and no Richard Rider. I think it's becoming, if they're going to keep including the Nova Corps, they need to do a Nova story. You know what I mean? It's way overdue.
I would agree. Richard Rider is the original Nova that we first saw in the comic book in the 1970s. And I would love a Richard Rider Nova centered episode even.
I was always hoping that the reason we didn't get to see Thanos in Infinity War take out Xandor to get the Power Stone, when we first see him, it's on Thor's ship and he's already got the Power Stone. Hmm. And then they make a reference to the fact that Xandar is leveled. And I always kept thinking, why we got to see him get all the other stones, why not the Power Stone? And then I couldn't help but think that the reason for that is that it was going to be a Nova story, and that Richard Rider Nova was going to die fighting Thanos and then transfer over the Nova power to, isn't there a second character that plays Nova?
I think in the last 10 years, there was another younger Nova.
Right. I don't remember the character's name.
That's because we're a bunch of old guys, so we remember.
Yeah. we know that old
70s
shit.
Nova. Yeah.
We're old school, sadly.
Old school Nova but fans.
I'd always hope that that's what they would do that. And I have to believe that that was a plan for Nova, but then they couldn't get to Nova, or they couldn't afford to get to Nova, or other things came out. I don't know. Maybe it was going to be a series on the Disney Plus and it didn't happen, or it's going to be too expensive or whatever. I don't know.
You know, also, it seems to me, I did recall reading, I think, some of the early comics where they introduced the new Nova. And I seem to remember thinking that the origin was a little similar to Peter Quill's origin, where he has a mixed parents and he's taken away from Earth, and which was not the way the Richard Rider story went. Richard Rider story was basically Marvel's interpretation of Green Lantern, where he takes over from this space group of, you know, the Nova Corps. So instead of
what's
the Green
his
Lantern
power set? Isn't he like infused with some like all of the power of the Nova? Or something like that. The Nova Corps has this ability to channel all of its power to every Nova member to one, and then or something like that. I never read Nova, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, I know in the movie they kind of did that via spaceships. You know what? In the comic book, I think the Nova's powers are more part of them in their body. I mean, remember the original Nova comic? Richard Rider was like shooting around, flying basically, and there might have been some energy blasts. I haven't read that in a while, but I just remember it was a fun comic when it first came out, quite a while ago. Yeah.
So anyway, Mark, thank you for your feedback and your comments. Thank you, Greg, Danielle, and Sydney. We appreciate all the comments. I hope people will continue to join in this process with us and send in your thoughts, either on the shows, the episodes, or on our casting. Lenny, the other thing is, can you tell people about the contest we've got going on as well?
Yeah. One other thing. Did you mention the Facebook group as another place to put?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. You did. Yep. I apologize. It's zoning out.
But you know what, let me just run through it again real quick. Since we just finished talking about, feedback, you can reach out on podcastica.com where you can record and leave a voice message or write your thoughts. You can also email us at talk@podcastica.com. And, we've got posts that are being put up on the Facebook group for each episode. It's at facebook.com/groups/podcastica. And then you can comment there and we'll read those comments here.
Yeah. Now, one question would be, why should you make a comment? Now, aside from being on our world famous podcast and being adored by many, there is
at least you and me.
Yeah.
We're adored by you and me.
That's right.
That's an audience of two. We're on our way. We're moving.
We will also be choosing one commenter at random in each cast to win an original illustrated sketch card by, who's this guy? Kirk Manley. Oh, yes.
One of the top artists around.
Kirk, we'll put up the Facebook site. Kirk, are we going to get to see what the sketch card looks like? Because Kirk is an awesome artist.
Sure. I put up one as a sample to show people, you know, what it would look like. You can see that in the original post I put up about it. But that's a good idea. Each time I send one out, I'll post the picture up of it. So that people can see what they look like.
And you could request any character from What If from either season one or season two. And that's a pretty wide array of characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as Kirk says, you know, check out on the Podcastica Facebook group to get a little preview of that.
So we had these commenters for this episode. I don't want to say this week because we're doing every other day practically. I put them together. I gave them numbers. Lenny did not know the order of those numbers and he picked a number. So, we do have a winner for this week, or again, my apologies for this episode. And the commenter, Greg, with your audio message, you were the lucky winner. Woo-hoo. So I'll reach out to you, or I'll touch base with you, and we'll figure out what character you want, and then I'll get that out in the mail to you in a day or so. I have to draw it first. So that's our show. Next up, we'll be covering What If episode 3, What If Happy Hogan Saved Christmas, which airs December 24th, Christmas Eve. And as well, episode 4, What If Iron Man Crashed Into the Grandmaster, airing December 25th. We should be recording those hopefully on Tuesday, December 26th, possibly on Monday, December 25th, on Christmas Day in the late afternoon, maybe, or evening. That I believe, is the episode, the Iron Man Crashed Into the Grandmaster, is the episode that was actually supposed to be part of last season. With Gamora and Tony Stark / Iron Man. So it'll be interesting to see I wonder if they did any additional work to that episode.
Kirk, you've solved a mystery that I had, because
I find that really hard to believe.
No. The Gamora episode is with Tony Stark. I was thinking the Nebula episode was with Tony Stark, and I kept waiting for Tony Stark to show up in the first episode. And I went, where is he? There's no Tony Stark here.
Tony Stark wasn't there, but according to you, the Batman was there. What the hell?
No, I played. Talk to me a little about that. Kirk and I were talking about, did we all spot all the Easter eggs? And Kirk is a giant Batman fan, so I said, "Well, of course you saw the Batman Easter egg." And Kirk spent the next 2 hours rewatching the episode three times, looking for it, and then I told him it was a joke. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, that's how we roll here at Who's Watching the Watcher. Well, we thank you all for listening. We wish you all happy holidays, Merry Christmas, a belated Happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and all that. And everyone stay safe, and thank you for listening.
Amen. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Who watches the Watchers? A What If Podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.